Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tangent. I'm Jack, and...
Hello, Jack!
Hi.
Hi, Jack.
That's Roston, and that's Ian.
Ugh. No, no.
Don't like that.
Mm. Although Roston, I think, sounds kind of like...
Rastafarian?
Dude, Roston's leader of a biker gang. It's like, yeah, I'm Roston. How can I help you?
Yeah. And Ian, there's...
Ian's a math nerd.
There never was an... Probably.
Well, it's good to have you guys here today. So I'm sad I missed last week, but...
Week was good.
It was a nail biter.
It was. Illinois, is that correct?
Illinois. It was a good one.
What's the next? What makes the next state then?
Indiana.
Indiana.
Mm.
I'll have to message my brother-in-law because he lived there for like 3 or 4 years. Mm. Went to school there, so I'll see if he knows anything.
Cool. We'll have to get some stories for that. Anyway, what are we drinking today?
Ooh, what are we drinking today?
Gasoline.
Oh, my camera's not over there anymore. Right, there we go.
Ooh, you pixelated as balls, dude.
As balls, huh?
Yes, sir.
Are balls known to be pixelated?
I mean, if they're healthy, then yeah. If not, you might want to go get that checked out. So,
what kind of resolution are we talking? Is like 240p is like 1080p
max. Any more than that, you've got cancer.
Okay, so what's like a healthy resolution then?
144.
Like, does it 144? Okay.
Yeah. The more chance of getting infected.
Okay.
So yeah, I was walking through the old Kroger the other day, and I just like was like, wait, hold on. Is that what I thought it was? And I grab it, and it's freaking Sour Patch energy drink. So I chat it to these boys here, and apparently where I'm at, only Red Berry exists. I thought it was Raspberry. Apparently it's Red Berry. And where Austin is, there's only Blue Raspberry, so that's what he got. And where Ryan is, there was none.
So I'm doing something different. We'll just blur it out. From the outlet store.
Nice. So, I guess we'll see if these actually taste like,
Is there something fun on the side of the can to read? No, there's not.
There's not. Nope.
It does say this is legendary energy, though. So, it does have 100% of 4 daily vitamins and 100 milligrams of neurofactor. I wonder what that is.
Ooh.
It's
and estrogen.
Yeah.
That's too close to estrogen, and I don't like that.
I was thinking, like, Astra Gin, like, maybe Space Gin, like, Astro Gin, but Astra Gin, I don't know.
I like this.
Huh, let's try this.
It says zero can sugar, zero fat, zero artificial colors, and then it's got a little ghost and says transparent label.
Yeah. Ghost, so I actually love they make really good protein. They make they have other brands that they use to flavor their protein. So they have like Chips Ahoy protein. So
they're the Lego of the drink industry. All they do is they get IPs from other people and make them good. Yeah. So like the Batman Lego, the Star Wars Lego.
Exactly. The Fruity Pebbles protein. Yep. Yeah, that one's the best.
Interesting.
Well, I'm going to break this bad boy up in blue raspberry. Got to be my favorite flavor of everything. So I'm quite excited to try it.
I'm a little sad I didn't have that one. Mm,
like blue raspberry Jolly Ranchers, easily one of the best candies ever made.
Okay. I'm not sure what my flavor is. It's just blue.
Oh, that's
definitely
sour.
Get the sour punch. Yeah, definitely tastes like a sour punch.
Wow, that's actually sour. I mean, it's not like super sour, but like, I've never had a sour drink before.
It totally tastes like if I didn't know this was Sour Punch flavor and you asked me what flavor it was, I might say that it's Sour Punch flavor.
Sour Patch. Sour Punch is different.
Sour Patch. You're
right. I take it yours isn't good, Ryan.
No, it's awful. I dare say that maybe we need to try this together just to venture into that realm and to, well, because we need energy drinks.
This is really to try. Good.
This is so good,
this
dude.
This one is not good.
I wish I could try the red one now.
Dude, I want to try the blue one. Dude, this is
delicious.
So, you know when you taste something, you're like, wow, there's way too much sugar in that?
There's none.
I taste, wow, there's sugar. But it's like, it's not bad.
But there's none.
Yeah, it does say zero sugar, but I'm tasting something.
Dude, that is really good.
Astringent is what I'm tasting.
I'm going to give this like a solid 8.5.
Dude, yeah, 8.5, 9.
That's probably one of the best ones we've had.
It almost tastes like a sour Otter Pop to me.
Yeah, it's really good.
That's good. That's freaking good.
I'm excited to try the other one I got today too, which I won't reveal yet, but it's another sour from the same brand.
And I also, they were doing like a deal thing, so I got like all the flavors I had. So there's also citrus and tropical mango. So they're not partnered with another, you know, brand or whatever, but I'm assuming if they can make that good, they can make the anything good.
But yeah, that's tasty.
How much caffeine?
Highly recommend.
200.
200.
Pretty standard. All right.
So more than a monster, less than a rock star.
Oh, I didn't even think. We didn't even talk about this. Do we have space news?
I looked today.
Quick, Google space news and read the first thing that comes up.
The South Korea hired SpaceX to launch 5 spy satellites by 2025. So South Korea might be a
spy satellites?
Yeah.
An American company is launching spy satellites for North Korea.
For South Korea.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said North. I was just like, oh, no. That seems like a bad idea.
I don't think Elon would deal with North Korea. Did you guys hear that Elon bought like a 9% stake in Twitter?
9.8.
Yeah.
And he was invited to the board of directors.
Didn't he turn it down,
and
though?
He said no at the last second. And people are saying it's because if you're on the board of directors, you're not allowed to own more than 14.9% of Twitter. And that he wants to own more. So.
Genius.
Let's see. Let's go. I did not prepare a paranormal encounter for us today, so I'm just going to Google one really quick and find a short one.
Ooh, I have a weird one that I heard today.
Oh, okay.
I will not give away the identity.
All right, let's hear it then.
But, paranormal encounter. Person was camping with their buddy, and they went to a spot near a river. I believe this was in Washington. They go to a spot near a river where they had lots of access to these hikes, and they had a hike that was up this cliff overlooking the river that you could then cliff jump off of. So they hike up there, and then across the river, one of the dudes sees like the silhouette. They're talking up there for like 30 minutes, and then he looks across the river, sees the silhouette of a person sitting there watching them, like staring right at him. And so he's like, okay, that's kind of weird. And it's just like right across the river, maybe like 50 yards away. So he's like, okay, that's weird. And he notices that the person is just still staring at them for like quite a while, like 5-10 minutes. And so then he like looks over and locks eyes with the person. And they had eyes locked for like a few seconds. And then all of a sudden he said it was the middle of a day time, but like right where the guy was standing lit up super, super bright, like brighter than the sun at noon or whatever time it was of the day. And then as soon as the light came on, then the guy turned around and reached behind this tree and pulled something out. And the guy he hucked it over his shoulder, and the guy realized that it was a rope. And so he's watching this guy, and he's like, talking to his friend, like, you seeing this? And his friend's like, I don't see anyone. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. So he keeps looking at this guy, and he starts to realize that his dad, who had died like 20 years before this, his dad was a carpenter and a logger and always wore like typical like lumberjack, like flannel jeans, like a wool cap, like the lumberjack garb, you know, and was like a weathered man. And so he said, like, the more that he looked at this guy, like, the guy appeared to be wearing some kind of flannel shirt that his dad used to wear. And he's like, the more I looked at him, the more that I realized, like, it looked exactly like my dad. Like, all the features, all of the, like, the silhouette, everything, the clothing, like, the mannerisms, everything was, like, similar to my dad. So he's, like, super fixated on this guy. This guy pulls a rope out from behind the tree. He hucks the rope, like, way high into the tree, pulls it down, and just, like, slowly starts doing something with the rope. And after a few minutes, he realizes that he's tying a noose.
Oh,
and my. So then the guy slips the noose around his neck. And so the rope is draped over the tree. So he basically, like, pulls the rope down on the other side to lift himself up. And he hung himself in a tree. And his body dangled there for, like, 5 minutes until he, like, stopped moving. And so he totally just watched this dude hang himself in a tree. And the whole time he's, like, asking this buddy, like, dude, are you seeing this right now? Like, what the heck is going on? And his buddy's like, no, I see nothing. Like, you're going crazy. And so he totally watched this dude hang himself in a tree. And he's like, I swear I wasn't on any drugs. Like, I wasn't drunk, nothing. Like, sorry. He's like, I know it happened. I know it was my dad. Like, I recognized him. I had just had this feeling like it was my dad. And his dad had died in a drowning accident in that same river like 20 years earlier. And so he went and he went to the coroner's office and he went to like all of his family. And he's like, hey, tell me straight, like, how did dad die? And everyone's like, no, he drowned. Like, he legitimately drowned. So he said he's at peace with knowing that his dad, like, knowing the cause of death of his dad, that his dad legitimately drowned. But he also knows that he saw his dad that day and that his dad, like, totally hung himself in a tree.
And this was someone that you know that told this story?
Yes.
Why didn't he go up to this person at any point?
He was across the river. He couldn't get across the river.
Oh, he must have missed that. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So he said, after the dude hung himself, like, the bright light that he saw around him, like, went off, and then the dude's body just, like, wasn't, and he was gone. Like, nothing.
Jeez.
Isn't that weird?
That's crazy.
So, do they legitimately think, like, it was their dad, or, like, what?
Oh, yeah, they're, like, at the time, they were super weirded out by it, but they were also, like, that was totally my dad, like, and he even said, like, I went and looked at pictures of my dad after, because his dad died when he was, like, mid to late teens, early 20s, something like that. So this is when he was, mid to late 20s. So his dad wasn't that far past. So this story happened, like, 15, 20 years ago. But at the time when the story happened, his dad had only been dead for what I would assume was somewhere within the vicinity of like 3 to 10 years. So he still had a good recollection of like what his dad looked like, his mannerisms, all that kind of stuff. And he said, like, I know it was my dad, 100%. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that it was my dad.
Weird. Very weird.
And at the time, he was just like, well, that was weird. I guess I'll just figure this out at another time in my life. Like, maybe something will happen and I'll figure out what the heck that was. But
yeah,
he just never has really been able to tie anything together to it.
Huh. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Crazy is a good word for it. Sorry, I gotta...
Yep, so dude saw his dad hang himself in a tree, like, few years after he died.
All right. Well, hope he's doing well mentally, but
I'm not trying to say he's crazy.
I'm saying, like, that would mess a man up. Like, if I witnessed that, I'd have to go to therapy.
He did say that he did go to therapy for it. Like, it messed him up pretty bad. Like, it was traumatizing for him. Obviously, he watched a guy hang himself, you know? Like, yeah. I think that'd be traumatizing for anyone. So he said like the rest of that day, he just like zoned out and just like couldn't deal with it at the time. And then he just kind of started to begin to deal with it, had to go to therapy, and now he's pretty much gotten over it, but he still doesn't know like what the heck happened, you know, like right. what it was.
Hmm. Well, crazy.
Truly, truly crazy.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, shall we move on to today's topic?
We shall.
All right.
Or when Austin, perhaps now is the time.
It is the time.
That we inform Jack of a new segment.
We have a new segment.
Oh, no. What is it?
In Weekly World News, we go to the headlines and find out that black birds are attacking Kentucky. Millions of birds are attacking a small Kentucky city, destroying buildings and parks, and injuring thousands of citizens.
So basically the segment is, we found a website that is called, well, Ryan told me about it, Weekly World News, that has like the weirdest and funniest news headlines I've ever seen. Yep. About like aliens, mutants, all that kind of stuff. Like, some of it I think is real, but then other stuff is like really bad tabloids, like Hillary Clinton adopts alien baby, or
I married
Bigfoot. Yeah, like similar thing, but I've seen where they do sometimes do like legit headlines too. They just make them like really funny, so we thought it'd be funny that every week with the new Weekly World News headline we have the segment.
And these headlines also come out on Tuesdays.
Why wouldn't you do today's then?
Because today's really sucked. Today's is actually fits into the space news with Planet Claire, but yeah.
All right.
But yeah, on March 31st, they had Vampires on the Loose in Chicago. Or March 26th, March Madness gets St. Peter fired from the Pearly Gates. That's good to know.
Okay, so I did March Madness this year at my work. They sent out an email that said like, hey, we're gonna do March Madness. The first place person gets like a legit prize, and then the top three get like little prize packs. So I won. I've never won before. I won the whole thing, and no one's even emailed me about anything. The first time that I ever won, nothing's come of it.
Nice.
And guess I'm kind of ticked off.
Guess what the prize was at your previous job for the winner?
$100.
$200 gas card.
Really? So like half a tank of gas?
Lol.
Zing.
Zing.
All
That's
right.
cool, though.
I think we're ready for you now, Jack.
Ready for me now, lovely. Okay, so today's episode is going to be on what is known as the Circleville Letters, or also the Circleville Writer, depending on if you want to call it after the person or the things that happen. Anyway, Circleville Letters is a very, very interesting story that I stumbled across by accident a couple days ago. And it goes as follows. Let's pull up my notes here. That'd be smart, huh? Bop. All right. In 1976, in Circleville, Ohio, there was a woman by the name of Mary... I don't actually remember how to say her name. Gillespie? Yeah, that's Gillespie? I don't know. Mary Gillespie.
Gillespie. I had a friend with the same last name.
Gillespie.
pronounced Gillespie.
Gillespie, thank you. Okay. Mary Gillespie, and she received a letter in the mail. No return address, no markings of any kind to indicate who it was from. The only thing was that it was sent to them, and it was postmarked in Columbus, Ohio. And it stated that it said, basically, I know you are having an affair with the superintendent of the school you work at. She was a bus driver. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. She's a bus driver at a school or a school district. And they basically said, you need to come clean or I'm going to make life hard for you, basically. And then it also stated that I have been observing your house and know you have children.
Eesh.
So this ain't no joke. She chalks this up to either a prank or nothing really, and keeps it to herself. Does not share it with anyone. And then she gets another one. Basically said, you need to... It's basically the same thing. And then the third letter came in a few days later. This is about a week after the first one. But this one was actually addressed to Ron, Mary's husband. Again, no return address, postmarked in Columbus, Ohio, and that's it. And there, it's written in big, blocky... Actually, you can see it behind Austin back there. That's one of the letters. It's big and blocky and weird. And people say they wrote it like that to avoid handwriting match or whatever. Oh, and that's Mary and... I'm going to guess Rob. Or Ron. Behind him as well.
Ron is her husband?
Correct. Okay, so this third one's addressed to Ron, so he opens it, and he doesn't know anything about the first two. She kept those to herself. The letters to him stated that if Ron did not stop his wife's affair, his life would be in danger. So he gets a letter saying, hey, your wife is having an affair with the superintendent of the school, and you need to confront her and get her to admit it, or else we'll... And then they threatened his life, which is strange. It's like they threatened her life and her kid's life, and now they're threatening him. Like, it's kind of weird. I don't know what their motive is at this point. Who are they trying to punish, basically? It sounds like...
Also, why kick the husband when he's down? Hey, guess what? Your wife's cheating on you. By the way, we're going to kill you.
For real. So, let me pull up my other notes. Over here. Let me get to my point. Sorry, I got lost. Okay. Again, the letter stated that if Ron did not stop his wife's affair, his own life would be in danger. As you can imagine, Mary could not hide it anymore. He confronted her and said, hey, what the heck is this? And she avidly denied the accusation. Very strongly denying, saying, this is fake. I am not having an affair. I have no idea. It's a prank, blah, blah, blah. And so they argued, discussed, blah, blah, blah. You know, we're just kind of confused. And then... eventually, they came to terms and basically went, okay, yeah, these are just fake. They're messing with us. Let's just forget about it, kind of thing. So they forget about it and hope it goes away. But it does not. 2 weeks later, the writer was back with threatening to go public with their affair, with her affair allegations, saying he would broadcasting on TV, CB radios, and billboards. And eventually they got so overwhelmed, they decided that they should tell some people. They didn't go to the police for some reason. they decided to like talk to their friends about it. Just like, hey, this is what's happening to us. You guys have any idea what we can do to help us? They told Ron's sister, Ron's sister and Ron's sister's husband. Okay, so, you know, the couple there. And then, Ron's sister's husband, and Ron's sister's husband's sister. Don't need to remember that, but that's...
This is quite a web that you're spinning here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's basically close family members, let's just say. And, they started to conjure up some ideas of who might be sending the letters. But they decided to have Paul, who is one of the three people they told, write the letters to the supposed person, claiming they know who they are and that they should stop sending this before they go to the authorities.
Wait, so I thought that you said that they didn't have a return address on those letters.
They didn't.
So how can they send the letters back?
They're not sending letters back to the person sending them. They got together and discussed, it's probably this person playing a prank on us. Let's mail him and tell him to stop, kind of thing. Never states who that person was they claimed it to be.
I like that they're mailing rather than just going and like...
Yeah, maybe they live like, far away. I don't know. This was in 76.
It's what we do. We mail.
So, they mail it to them, and the letter stopped. For several weeks. So, like, sweet, awesome. We scared him. It's over.
But... I mean, this is the mail. It could just be that it took a week.
It took a week.
In order for him to receive the mail, and then a week for him to respond, and so it was a couple weeks of waiting on the mail.
Yep. But a few months later, in 1977 now, Ron received a phone call at home, and it says, we can only assume that it's the letter writer on the other side of the line. We don't know for sure, but what we do know is his children saw him answer the phone. And prior to the phone call, they said he was relaxing, having a good night. Nothing was wrong. He was happy and relaxed. As soon as he hears the voice, they say it must have revealed the identity of the writer. Because immediately after the call, he got super angry and said to his kids, I'm going to go take care of this writer once and for all. Grabbed his handgun, got in his truck, and sped away.
This is Ron that's doing this?
Correct. Mary's husband.
Right.
A few minutes later, less than 15 minutes later, he was found dead on the side of the road. His truck crashed into a tree.
Dang.
So at first you go, okay, dude was so mad, was so all over the place, he just lost control. There wasn't another car, there wasn't other, like an animal, anything like that.
Or could be the secret lover that is writing these letters and he cut the brake lines.
Maybe. But after a investigation was done, it was noted that one round was fired from his gun. So they're like, okay, so something went down. Why would he have fired his gun otherwise?
Did they find the shell casing in his truck?
Does not say that. Yeah, no, it doesn't say anything about that. But after they did the autopsy, they were claiming, okay, so this is clearly a, you know, murder, manslaughter, something. We don't know exactly what, but it's ill intent for sure. What's the word for that in an investigation?
Suspicious.
No, it's...
Word for what, sorry?
For thinking that it's bad. Or people... Someone else was involved.
Motive?
Not motive. Gosh, dang it, I...
Person of interest.
No, it's like this person was... murdered, not killed naturally.
Was... murdered.
Oh my gosh, what is the word for it? You guys are gonna think I'm so dumb when I finally come up with it.
Not manslaughter?
It's like... Holy crap! I'm so dumb right now.
Assault with a deadly weapon.
No, it's like... This case is considered to be... His death was... ill intent.
Self-defense.
No, gosh, dang it! I'm so mad right now.
Let me look it up. Murder types.
No, not murder types. What is it
premeditated.
When murder is suspected. Foul play. That's what I was looking to say.
Foul play. Wow.
I suspect foul play.
Holy crap. Okay. I feel so dumb right now, but...
That was quite an adventure that we went on with the listeners.
I got there. Anyway, so clearly they think it's foul play because the handgun was fired. But after the autopsy was done, they claimed that his alcohol level was 0.16, which is almost twice the legal limit at the time and in the place. But they were shocked by this, and they swore up and down that he was not a drinker, nor did he, nor did his family claim that he appeared drunk when he left. So they're like, he wasn't drinking. Like, I don't know how he got drunk, that drunk even. Like, twice the legal limit, you'd probably be stumbling. And
yeah.
I personally do not know. I have never, well, will it never, there's a good story about that, never willingly had it.
Doesn't it take some time, though, to actually inebriate you, or?
Not that long, I don't know. But.
Where's Dallas when we need him?
Sheriff Dwight Radcliffe questioned and eliminated at least one suspect in the case, changing his suspicion when the suspect passed the polygraph test. Radcliffe then ruled Ron's death an accident, claiming he had lost control and crashed while driving drunk.
Yeah, this sheriff fellow doesn't quite seem to be...
You're actually onto something here.
I'm just saying, if he eliminated one suspect, and then he's like, well, I did the best I could.
Hold on. To his family, the question still remained, because he wasn't drunk. Without knowing who he talked to or else who else was on the road, there's no telling what happened. Some argue that you wouldn't crash on roads you're so familiar with, but the other side of the argument is that familiarity meant he was too comfortable and would have driven himself off the road when his brain went into autopilot. However, several residents of Circleville soon received their own letters claiming that Sheriff Radcliffe had been involved in a cover-up.
Oh, snap!
Yeah, so it's not just his family anymore. Not everybody. Lots of people in Circleville are now getting letters from this person. All, no address, all postmarked from Columbus, Ohio. And they're saying Sheriff Radcliffe is hiding something. Ron's gun was fired at least once. How could this be anything other than foul play? Oh, crap, if I just kept reading my notes, I would have come up with it. Gosh, dang it. Private investigator... Oh, wait, no, I don't want to get into that yet.
I was going to say that Dwight Radcliffe was a super bad A name, like Radcliffe, Dwight Radcliffe, but then he sounds like a total D-bag, so.
So his brother-in-law, Paul, one of the people they talked to about it, immediately called it foul play. Police investigate it further and still only rule it an accident. All we know is that things have seemed to escalate really quickly. From simple trollish letters to death, just like that. And what's weird is this: the letters has nothing to do with the affair anymore. It's now with a cover-up with the sheriff. So it makes you wonder, what is this writer's motive? Like, what's the end goal? What is he trying to, he or she trying to do? And then, the next thing we know is that Mary and the superintendent have now publicly acknowledged that they did have a relationship. So their letters were right, that they were having an affair, which is weird, because if they're keeping it secret, who on earth knows that and is going to send letters about it? But what they claimed was that the affair didn't actually happen until after the letters started. So either A, this letter writer is telling the future, or B, they were just, I don't know, they didn't want to admit that he was right beforehand. I don't really know. Not really important, but it's just kind of a funny thing that
it's they odd.
Claim that. Like I said, nobody really believes this, but blah, blah, blah.
I bet the superintendent was like, well, hey, someone's saying we're having an affair, so we might as well. Like, let's just make it happen.
It's got to happen now. Anyway, 1977, or 76 is when it started. 77 is when all that happened. Now it's 83. She keeps getting these letters, and so do everyone in Circleville. Not everybody, but lots of people. And they're basically...
How big is this town?
About 8,000 to 10,000 people.
Everyone is getting this?
Not everyone. Lots of people, though.
Lots of people.
And then, and it keeps escalating and escalating. 1983, she's still driving the school bus for the school district.
So this is like 6 years later?
Yeah. Along her usual route that she takes every day driving the school bus, there are signs posted along the side of the road that basically are calling her a cheater and a whore and a terrible person. And
like, are we talking billboards?
Not billboards, like side of the road, like sticking in the ground signs, like Trump 2020 signs.
Like a real estate agent seeks
$650,000 a week.
I don't know if they're quite that small. They may have been a little bigger than that. But anyway, she got so sick of all of them at driving by. She's like, oh my gosh, this is more and more and more. And she got so fed up, she pulled off to the side of the road, stomped out to the sign that was threatening her daughter. The one in particular was threatening her daughter, and tore it right off a string that was attached to a cardboard box. Still confused, confused, she picks up the cardboard box and goes, what the heck is this? Why is it connected to the sign by a string? Opens it up, and there's a gun inside. And the gun has the string wrapped around the trigger. It was booby-trapped. The intent was, if someone were to pull the sign out, it would pull the string and fire the handgun and kill the person that pulled the sign. Luckily, it malfunctioned. Didn't work. It didn't fire off. But it very well... I think it's because she pulled it out sideways instead of up or something like that. And it was... Everybody believed it was specifically designed to kill her. I was like, that's pretty insane. That, like, not only did you know she would be the one that would take it out, not like a neighbor going, oh, wow, these are terrible, we should probably get rid of these, but also, like, that specific sign? There were multiple.
Were they not all booby-trapped then? Just the one?
It doesn't say any of the other ones are, but I feel like, doing my research, I feel like it would come up saying, oh, yeah, we went and checked all the other signs, and all of them had guns on them. But no.
Right. But that was the specific sign that
it did threaten her daughter.
Was talking about her daughter.
So I'm guessing that was probably the plan, was that one was like, you know, like, okay,
that one could be far. That one could be the trigger sign, huh?
Oh my word. So she calls the police, they come and take a look at it, and they notice that the serial number has been etched off, or attempted to be etched off.
Of course.
But it's still there, and you can still read it. Or maybe, I don't think you can read it, but they were able to lift it, it says in the reports. I don't know how they lifted it.
There's ways that, being from the gun business myself, there are ways that you can try to file serial numbers down as much as possible, but if you don't get it all the way, you can still, like, down to, like, the microscopic level, you can still see the etching. So, like, to the naked eye, it can look completely filed off, but if they really didn't go down far enough, then the etching will still be there.
So, after running the serial number, they traced it back to none other than Paul. Paul is the brother-in-law that they divulged that information to, and who also claimed that it was foul play. Yeah, Ron's brother-in-law, but now, at this point, is ex-brother-in-law, because Mary's sister, or wait, Ron's sister, divorced him. So, when questioned, he was 100% cooperative and said, yes, that is my gun, but it was stolen from me a day or two ago, or a few days ago. And he said he didn't report it. But he's like, I did not do that. There's no way I would do that kind of thing.
Pretty sure if I had a gun stolen, that's the first thing I would do is call the cops and be like, whatever happens with this gun, it wasn't me.
It's not in mine. Yeah. So he told
me. Or even if you didn't have the gun stolen and you're planning on using it for crime, still call the cops and say, hey, this gun was stolen. Whatever happens with it, it wasn't me.
Fair enough.
Genius.
He said he had an alibi, a friend whom he asked just yesterday to help him search for the lost firearm. So, what he claimed. They did not believe him. And so they basically said, you gotta take a handwriting test and we're gonna compare it against the notes. He asked Paul to try and copy the handwriting from the letters. Honestly, an odd request. It's fair.
Okay, once again, this seems like Sheriff Radcliffe is stacking the deck, because he's saying, yep, I need you to replicate exactly what this handwriting looks like. Oh, look, it's him! They look exactly the same!
Let's see. They were shown the letters and was told to copy, but Sheriff Radcliffe one-upped us and also had him repeat the letters verbally while writing, as if that's any sort of giveaway. I don't understand that either. So, like he said, while you're typing U, say Y-O-U. Is that a technique?
Sounds like the writing, too.
He even knew how to spell the letters. It's him.
Not only did we get it in writing, we got it on tape. Him saying it exactly.
Sheriff thought it was awfully convincing, and apparently Paul's renditions of the letters looked a lot like the actual letters. So the sheriff moved forward as Paul with the mains as the main suspect.
This is so stupid.
Paul did not see Faye saying, well, obviously it wasn't me. They'll figure that out eventually.
Nope, not in this system. No way.
After the test, Paul offered to take Sheriff Radcliffe to his garage to show him where his missing gun was kept. After that tour, the two returned to the courthouse where Paul was promptly arrested and charged with attempted murder. And wasn't until 8 months later, in October of 83, when Paul went on trial for attempted murder of Mary. Although never actually being charged with the writing of threatening letters, it became a crucial piece of evidence against him. And eventually he was sentenced to prison for 7 to 25 years.
For real?
Yep, 100%.
That's a... Wow.
According to the sheriff, even if he didn't write the letters, that it was his gun in the booby trap, and even if there was no way to prove that it was the he was the one that put the trap together, the fact that it was there for sure his gun was enough to convict him.
No, no, this is freaking bullcrap. This is this is exactly like How to Make a Murder that's on Netflix. This is ridiculous.
At the trial, the handwriting expert testified that Paul was the letter writer based on the sample he provided to the sheriff back in February.
Oh my god!
Even Mary testified that she believed that he was the writer after his wife, ex-wife Karen, supposedly visited her with the same suspicions. To seal the deal, Paul's boss then testified that he was not on at work on the day that the booby trap was found. He actually had that day off. Which was... Oh, actually, he didn't have that day off. Sorry. He didn't show up for work that day. Or had the day off. I don't remember. One of the two. Which is weird because he was usually, like, a spotless, shining employee. Paul is, was looking more and more suspicious. But Paul had an alibi for most of the day. Even a pretty solid one at that. But he never took the stand in his defense. So he never actually said what his alibi was. He said he had, in his lawyers, blah, 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 said that he had a solid defense or alibi, but he never took the stand to plea it because apparently if he took the stand, prosecution would have been permitted to introduce even more letters and to be used against him. I understand the law. I don't know how that's okay.
Doesn't that seem works, like a good thing though, to get more evidence?
I don't know, I guess.
Oh, he... No, wait. So if he really did it, he wouldn't want more evidence, I guess, to come out against him. Yes, so I guess
I don't know.
Well, and who knows what kind of like, damning letters those could have been that maybe he could have been innocent, but then just by them introducing those letters, then... would make his case look even worse. And so he's just trying to get as minimum evidence in hoping that maybe he'll get lucky in the sentence. Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
All right. At this point, the Circleville letter writer had a portfolio of over 1,000 letters written and sent. Again, Paul was convicted and given a 7 to 24 year sentence for attempted murder. Paul never even denied that the gun belonged to him. He fully admitted that he owned the firearm, even if he didn't know about its whereabouts. And that ownership convicted the jury. He was found guilty and sentenced. Again, the prosecutor said that if it was his gun, then he is liable. But the whole story...
Yeah, he might be liable, but he's not...
Not for attempted murder.
Ugh, that's so stupid.
Whole story, whole stolen gun theory, blah, 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 I don't care about that anymore. Let's see, I'm going to skip that. So, now, Paul is in prison. And he's actually in solitary confinement, to be specific. And he himself... Oh, sorry. Letters kept coming in to all the people. Letters kept going, even after he was in prison. I feel like that's pretty good right there, you know, saying, you know, probably wasn't him. And after... Oh, I don't remember how long it was. I want to say like a year... Or, no, it was more than that. Anyway, he got a parole hearing. He goes up to the parole hearing. He's got all the good behavior. He's doing fine. He's doing good. He's fully expecting to get parole. And they say, sorry, you are still harassing people by sending letters to everybody. We're not giving you parole. And he goes, I'm literally in prison. And there's like, we don't know how you're doing it, but you're still doing it, and stop. And
sounds like witchcraft. We don't know how you're doing it.
No parole. We'll
burn you at the stake to make you stop.
Very soon after being denied parole, Paul himself receives a letter while in prison. And it says, hold on, I gotta pull up, I want to read the exact picture. Da, 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 da. I'll even bring it. Oh, ah, what happened? Let's see. It says, Freshour, which is his last name, Paul Freshour. Now when are you going to believe you aren't getting out of there? I told you 2 years ago when we set them up, they stay set up. Don't you listen at all? No one wants you out. No one... The joke is on you. Ha ha, tell no one of this letter. I saw the paper. Great news. Great. The sheriff loved it. Ha ha, do you believe it now? Do you?
It's too bad he can't tell anyone about that letter, because it said specifically in there not to show anyone.
So, I don't know, that's pretty, pretty good evidence that it wasn't him, but...
Yeah.
But then, you know, people could say he wrote the letter himself and claimed it, that he received it kind of thing, but I don't know. And each letter that kept coming to all the people in, this is important, to Circleville, each one that kept coming after he was arrested was still postmarked from Columbus, even though Paul was in prison in Lima, almost 100 miles away, with plenty of other postmaster places, whatever you call them, post office, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Places that would have taken it instead of Columbus. So, yeah, another piece of evidence, I feel like. Turns out, even though it's Paul's in solitary confinement, letters kept coming. At this point, blah, blah, blah. Even now, the warden doesn't think Paul could have anything to do with it, but the sheriff would not budge. Is that kind of funny? The warden can be like, yeah, this guy definitely didn't do it. And it doesn't matter.
It's that sheriff. He's got all the power.
In December of 1990. Now, this is 7 years later. Oh, sorry. 7 years later, that's when the parole hearing came. Sorry, I missed that part. The parole board said, you continued writing these letters and you show no remorse for this crime. Was denied parole. When Paul actually received his own letter saying blah blah blah, I read that. People then suspected that maybe he had somebody helping him on the outside to keep sending letters and he wasn't alone. Not sure I buy that. So things got a little interesting after that. Next, the popular TV series Unsolved Mysteries that went from, what, like the early 90s till mid-2000s, something like that. Did you guys ever watch that?
Yes.
Great show.
I believe so. Great show. And I think I saw a video that really freaked me out about an alien abduction and started me down the path that I am on now.
Anyway, they hear about this and go, we got to cover this. So they start doing a little bit of research and then receive a letter in the mail. Same thing. No return address. And...
Okay, so this makes me think that if they got some instant mail just by looking into it, whatever digging that they're going to be going into, they're going to be digging into probably the sheriff, the wife, family members, potentially neighbors. So I'd say any one of them is the actual letter writer.
Fair enough. Let's see. The letter basically says, stay out of Ohio, or you El Creepo, or El Creepos, I think is what it said, will regret it.
El Creepos, huh?
Let's see if I can find it.
So it's clearly someone that doesn't really speak Spanish.
Forget Circleville, Ohio. Do nothing to hurt Sheriff Radcliffe. If you come to Ohio, you El Sickos will pay.
El Sickos.
So they...
Why the L?
I don't know.
That's funny to me.
So they decide after that, okay, now we definitely gotta go and do this. So they go in, and with the help of somebody who's done some research on this before, who was named... crap, I lost it. Where is he? Martin Yant. He discovered that another school bus driver, who also, you know, did a coworker of hers, was on the same route as Mary that day of the booby trap incident, but about 20 minutes ahead of her. And she claimed to see on the side of the road somebody setting up what looked like a sign on the side of the road and messing with it. With a parked yellow El Camino next to them, and that his physical description was nothing close to Paul's.
Case closed right there. El Camino, El Sickos, it's the same. That's, wrap it up, that's the guy.
And they go, really? Why did you not, you know, testify about this in court? And she said, I told them I'm available and I want to testify. And they said, okay. And they never contacted her ever again. And this is evidence that would have kept him out of jail.
Right.
100%. They also asked the sheriff and Mary for interviews for the show. They both declined. Mary, I understand. She probably wants to get the pass behind her. The sheriff declining?
That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Let's see. They asked for the description that she saw of the man on the side of the road. They said it was a blonde man, blah, blah, blah. And they figured it actually fits pretty close to Karen's new boyfriend. Karen is the ex-husband of Paul. The one who got convicted. New boyfriend. Would have had access to the gun. Maybe.
Would he have had access to the gun? Maybe.
No, she would have had access to the gun.
I see.
And given it to the boyfriend to set up. I don't know. Speculation at that point. In March of 1992, the police chief, James McKean, I don't know, received an anonymous letter very similar to the others, except this one was printed in all lowercase rather than upper, like usual. In it, the writers tell us that the real letter writer was Mary the entire time.
So she was writing them...
to herself?
To herself? To expose her own affair?
Oh. But then... sorry. Should have kept going. Actually, they said it was a teacher named Mary, who was a coworker of our Mary... and who apparently had become, quote, very infatuated with Mary. So, I don't know.
So Mary gets around.
Apparently. I don't know she wants Mary all to herself, I guess, is the meaning there. I don't know. He considered if this had been a grand scheme to get her husband out of the way. If so, she definitely got what she wanted.
Also, the writer told us that the same person that killed Ron was also responsible for killing a Pickaway Country School teacher named Vicky Kolk 3 years earlier. The Kolk murder having never gotten solved. So that's interesting. Sometime later, Chief McKean got a second letter where the writer told him how Mary printed all of her letters and even set up numerous booby traps at the schools, but none of which were ever discovered. Police did take this seriously, investigated every school in the district, but never found any evidence of any other booby trap. So, I don't know, it's kind of sounding like attention for these last few ones. Just trying to cause havoc. I don't know, because they clearly weren't true. There were no booby traps set up that they could find. In 1994, 10 years after being incarcerated, Paul was finally given parole, and he continued to maintain his innocence. However, the author of the letters has still not yet been revealed. When Unsolved Mysteries ran the story, Mary and the sheriff declined to be featured on the show, but only a month after broadcasting it, the show received a postcard. It read, I already read that one, Fran. Yeah? Well, that was after it aired. Sorry, I thought it said before it aired. As I've alluded to already, blah, 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 I wrote too much stuff.
You're just too darn prepared, Jack.
Paul kept maintaining his innocence post-release, even ending up making a website and writing a blog, and then continuing to write a 127-page research paper, because he wanted to find out for himself who it actually was. While not necessarily very coherent, it does include court documents, evidence, and his own thoughts on things. And it's important to note that he acts very sympathetic towards the letter writer, which is weird, and convinces us further that, and maybe at one point in his infancy, he would have been the one who started it all. Paul passed away in 2012, but the letter writer concluded their business in the mid-1990s. So. Now that the letters are blah, blah, blah. And then something else that's kind of interesting. Paul, although not mentioned in the segment, Paul allegedly admitted to Sheriff Radcliffe that he had written between 40 and 50 of the Circleville letters. I don't know.
Wait. Admitted so to the supposedly sheriff. This was Paul saying it to the sheriff, and yeah. So the sheriff is telling everyone?
Yeah.
Fishy. Super fishy. Yeah.
But did Paul ever come out and say, yeah, I told the sheriff that? Because
nope.
If he's claiming his innocence, then that seems like a stupid thing to tell a sheriff. Like, especially a sheriff. Like, if you're going to come out and say I'm innocent and then tell the sheriff, yeah, it was me. Like,
especially the sheriff that put you away and wanted to put you away.
Right.
So there are three people, like, you know, in Reddit, and this guy Martin Yant, who started the whole thing, believe there are three people who actually were the writer, or one of the three that were actually the writer. The first is the superintendent's son. He would have known about the affair, would have been upset about it. That's pretty much all there is to it, I think. The second person was believed to be the coworker, which we talked about. And the third person was Paul's ex-wife and ex-wife's new boyfriend, who we also talked about. It's believed that he was the man seen next to the El Camino on that day. And it was later discovered that one of her relatives had owned a yellow El Camino at that time.
Look at that!
Despite this evidence, police still remain that Paul was the Circleville writer.
They would.
Interesting. They would. What do you guys think?
Hold on, one last thing. In August of 2021, last year, a 48 Hours episode aired that featured an interview with Beverly East, a renowned handwriting and forensic documentation expert. Interestingly, she concluded that definitively the police were correct all along, and it was Fresh Hour's handwriting. She pointed to key characteristics in the handwriting that matched Fresh Hour to prove her point. However, how Fresh Hour would have been able to write some of the letters from prison remains unknown. So,
interesting.
That's the story of the Circleville writer.
That's crazy. I don't understand any of the motive really to do it. Like, none of that really makes sense at all to me.
At first, it was just to stop doing an affair. Then the person dies, and then someone was almost killed. Why? What was the goal? I don't buy the coworker Mary one because the person tried to kill Mary. Why would you do that?
That's weird. Yeah, the whole gun thing, like, the whole Mary one doesn't make any sense to me because, one, like, why would you write a letter saying you're having an affair to make your husband all ticked off at you? Like, that's just dumb. And then, two, like, there's nothing to gain from that, I don't think. Like,
yeah, what is, okay, so Ron, this doesn't make any sense. So Mary and Ron, Mary was the cheater, Ron is the husband. Mary's getting the letters, tells, one of the people that they tell is Paul, who is Ron's brother-in-law.
Right.
Why would his brother-in-law kill Ron?
I don't know. Beef in the family, who knows?
That's so stinking weird.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
And then even on some of the theories of it being Paul's ex-wife being involved, there again, what is the connection? Like, that's going three deep, going to Paul's. So yeah, maybe his ex-wife has some beef against Paul, but where the heck does this ex-wife have any beef against Mary and Ron?
And how would she have known about the affair as well?
This doesn't make, the only thing that makes sense to me is the freaking sheriff. Like, it's so sketchy. If this is all the evidence that there is, and we'll base it off of exactly the way you said it, Jack, that this just doesn't make any sense why this would go this far in court. And this looks exactly like How to Make a Murderer.
So what's weird to me is at first the letter writer wrote saying, yeah, the sheriff is hiding something, and tried to get everyone to turn on him. But then, when he writes a letter to Paul in prison, it says,
it was then, like, taking the sheriff's side, it says, like,
I saw the paper, great news, when he got denied parole. The sheriff loved it. Blah, blah, blah. And then, when, Unsolved Mysteries came in, their letter said, what did it say?
They said, leave the sheriff alone.
Yeah, it said, forget Circleville, Ohio, do nothing to hurt Sheriff Radcliffe. Like, now he's, like, protecting him. Like, so, I don't understand the whole sheriff thing.
Okay, new theory. The original person that wrote the letters did know about the everything that was going on. Don't really know why Ron died, but it makes sense then that the sheriff killed the original writer, and then the sheriff became the rider to cover his own tracks.
Weird.
So there were two riders.
A lot of people say there were so many letters, there was no way it was just one person.
Yeah.
The whole thing, like, from the beginning... Okay, so maybe it just starts out as someone telling Mary that she needs to come clean, and Ron dying was a complete accident. Wasn't supposed to happen, and so then it's covering the tracks of why Ron died. That would make sense, then, that the sheriff would be somehow involved for the sheriff's crappy behavior here. So if the sheriff was the one telling, was outing the whole affair to begin with, and Ron died somehow, and it just all got out of hand with the sheriff, yeah, so I'm gonna go with sheriff killed Ron, sheriff got out of hand. Yep, case closed.
But what was the motive if it was the sheriff?
I think it was just an accident. So he did the whole thing of somewhat honestly maybe trying to get Mary to confess about her her affair and what was going on. But then whatever happened with Ron was an accident. Accidentally killed him, and then it just snowballed and
completely lost control. Why would he write letters saying the sheriff is hiding something?
Yeah. I see you poking holes.
I do 100% think the sheriff had a great involvement. Like, there's too many fishy things around the sheriff to just think that he was like an innocent player in all this.
So, if two handwriting experts said it was Paul, what do you think?
I honestly have a really hard time with supposed experts these days, because it seems like the experts get a lot of stuff wrong, and we're talking about handwriting, and this was in 1970s. I doubt that they're... It was probably rather new at the time, studying handwriting.
Who knows?
I have no idea. This is, like, I don't know. Usually these crazy cases, they, like, you know, at least have, like, a motive as to why they're happening. At no point of this story did I understand why they were writing about this. Like, what their end goal was, why they were doing it. Were they just bored?
That is weird. Yeah, that's the biggest thing I'm hung up on, is like anyone's motive in this story. Like, no one to me has a good motive to write it. Like, I don't know. It's a weird one.
Yep.
But who did it, Austin? Who do you put your money on?
I do think the sheriff was involved. Do I think so? There's a good question. Who wrote? There's a lot of whodunits here. Like, who wrote the letters? Who killed Ron? Were they the same person? Probably, but maybe not.
I think it was the sister, or not the sister. Yeah, the sister / ex-wife.
Check. Ex-wife.
I think it was her.
Paul's ex-wife?
Yep.
So Paul. So that's Mary's sister, right?
No, it's Ron's sister.
So Ron's sister, and then Paul was her husband.
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, they had just recently divorced, so she doesn't love the dude. She would have had access to the house or the garage to get the gun, or at least known where it was.
But when the letters started, though, were they still married or were they divorced at that time?
think they were still married at that time.
Yeah, that's a weird one. I'm still hung up on the motive. I don't understand anyone's motive in it.
Yep. And yeah. We never will. Paul's dead now. Died 10 years ago. So we're not going to get anything more out of him. He never admitted it. I don't know. Would I? That's a good question. If you were like a serial killer or a, you know, this kind of person or something that went unsolved, you're on your deathbed, would you admit it? Just because, like, yeah, just give people closure saying, yeah, it was me. I'm on my deathbed. Doesn't matter. Or would you die and let the mystery live on?
That's a good question.
Paul's got kids, so I honestly feel like if it were me, I would want to still maintain a good...
That's fair. Yeah, you don't want to make your family look like a terrible human beings. I don't know. Get harassment for no reason. I don't know.
That's a good question. Because the thing is, like, you mentioned, like, some of the stunts might have been done to get attention. And so if it was Paul and he was looking for attention, don't you think he would come out and say at the end, like, yeah, it was me, or even beforehand, like, yeah, it was me, if he wanted that kind of attention? If he's already caught and he's already serving the time, like, I don't know, like, a lot of serial killers will just like relish in reliving their crimes, you know, and like telling what they did. And so if he really did want that attention, you'd think that he might come out and say that. But who knows?
I'm looking on Reddit. This guy said it's weird that the convicted Paul of attempted murder despite no motive, an alibi, and no physical evidence.
That's yeah, but true. He didn't really say what the alibi was. He just said, hey, it's locked tight.
I wonder if that ever came out, what the alibi was.
Because if I were the murderer, I wouldn't say that I was murderer. But if I was innocent, and after this whole thing happened, then I would for sure be talking about what my alibi was.
Yeah.
100%.
Because the case is already done. He's already been convicted. So he doesn't have any problem with double jeopardy. So if it's about saving face, then he could tell about the alibi.
Let's see.
Point.
Yeah, I don't know. I just looked at a few different websites. Just all of them say, even though Paul had a solid alibi for his whereabouts that day, he decided not to take the stand in his own defense.
Yeah, it's weird that they don't go into his... Okay, so if it's not the sheriff, then I guess you could have something maybe where Paul was involved. Maybe same storyline, though. Knows about the affair going on, and since it is Ron's brother-in-law, has Ron's best interest in mind, and then maybe he and Ron are like freaking out and they're gonna go kill or take out whoever, and then on the way he tells Ron, hey dude, it was me, and I blah 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 blah. And then that's when Ron freaks out, and then Paul accidentally kills him.
I forgot about this. In the letter that he got in prison, Paul got in prison from the writer, it said, now when are you going to believe you aren't going to get out of there? I told you 2 years ago, when we set them up, they stay up. Don't you listen at all. Doesn't that insinuate that they've talked and they know each other?
Yes.
I told you 2 years ago, when we set them up, they stay up. What is...
So talking about the signs probably when you set up the signs.
Or when you set a person up, they stay set up.
Well, this is weird because it says 2 years ago. At that point of receiving the letter, he had been in prison for 7 years.
Right.
Huh. I don't know.
Well, that's the potential possibilities, at least in my book, is I think Ron dying was an accident. I don't think it was a murder. I think it snowballed after that.
Yeah.
Paul could have been involved. Sheriff, definitely a dirtbag.
I think what happened is when he picked up the phone, he actually recognized who it was.
Oh, that's right.
And that's why he got so mad. And the people did not expect him to recognize him or something like that, so they had to take him out. And then, something else. Not something else, but like we already talked about it. Mary testified that she did believe Paul was the letter writer after Paul's wife had visited Mary and expressed the same concerns. So, Karen comes over and says, "Hey, I think my ex-husband was the letter writer." Doesn't that kind of sound like planting a seed, maybe?
Maybe.
I mean, if it was her, then I feel like that would have been a good idea to pit the blame on someone else, kind of thing. But I don't know, maybe she did honestly believe that. But I still believe it was her and her new boyfriend that did it. Who knows? We'll never know.
It's very strange.
Well, that is a fun story, Jack.
Yeah, I thought so.
That is full of rabbit holes.
Yeah.
Yes, quite.
All right, well, let us know what you think about this here story, who you think it was, and any other details that you might know about it. If you're from Circleville, did you get a letter? I want to see it.
Whew. That'd be cool to see a real letter.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, they don't really go into detail on what those other letters said, yeah, do they?
Nearly over 1,000 letters were said, but we only know what, like, I don't know, 10 of them said, maybe?
Yeah. That's weird.
Whatever. All right, well, share with your friends. Let us know what you would like to hear. And...
And comment on Jack's beard and his long hair. If you want him to cut it, then you'll have to send us money.
Oh.
Yep.
I'll do it for.
Okay, Jack, would you cut it for money?
Yeah, a grand.
$1,000?
Yeah.
Dude, I'd do it for like $20.
Ryan would do it for a can of clam chowder.
I've been working on this for a while and I like it. Except it is getting annoying sometimes. I had to shave up the beard quite a bit because I kept eating it by accident.
Yep, that happens. Then you twirl it with your tongue when it's on the side of your mouth.
Yep. And plus it was just looking all scraggly down here. And whatever. Anyway, thanks for watching / listening, and have a wonderful rest of your day, I guess. I don't know.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye.
Thanks.